am George Knapp, listening to That UFO Podcast and having one hell of a good time.
Hi, everyone, and welcome back to That UFO Podcast. I am delighted on this show to be joined by the chairman of the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance and co-founder alongside regular podcast guest Stephen Bassett. He is a veteran Hollywood publicist and author and also a podcast host in his own right. I'd like to welcome Dan Harary to the podcast. Dan, welcome.
Thank you, Andy. Thank you. This is great. I've been wanting to talk to you for a long time.
I know. And listen, we're going to probably come full circle to talk about the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. That was an original show back in November when it launched. I believe November 2nd was the official launch of the HDA. And I hosted Serena, DC at the time. Mixed reaction to the podcast on that one. We're going to get to the HDA, and it's had some time to flesh out. You are the chairman, co-founder, you know your stuff with it. So we'll come back to that. But Dan, you've had a hell of a career in Hollywood. Let's forget about UFOs even just for a moment. Let's talk a bit about you and your background.
Sure. That's really funny. You know, I'm a Hollywood publicist. I've been a Hollywood publicist for just over 40 years now. And I'll give you the thumbnail of my life and career, which is really, in retrospect, Andy, now that I'll be 68 in June, and now that I look back, I'm like, wow, I did all those things, really? So I grew up in Asbury Park, New Jersey. Sorry, I'm just getting over a cold.
No, that's
okay. I grew up in Asbury Park, New Jersey, the Jersey Shore. I had long hair. I played the drums. You can see my electronic drums back there. I've been playing drums since the age of 10. And when I was in high school in the early 70s, I was the stage manager at a concert hall a block from the ocean, Asbury Park Boardwalk, called the Sunshine Inn. And guess who used to play there all the time? Well, Bruce Springsteen used to play there all the time. This is before 2 years before Born to Run, right? So I worked with Bruce Springsteen in 1973 a couple of times. And Clarence Clemons, the sax player, once asked me and my best friend if we wanted to go on the road with Bruce as their road crew. And this is a true story. I said, Clarence, we're 16, we don't drive, and our fathers want us to go to college. So we turned down Bruce Springsteen. That's a true story. Bruce was a local bar band, and we knew him. You know, he was one of us. So that's high school, right? That's before my career. I worked with Bruce. I worked with Kiss. I worked with Fleetwood Mac, Humble Pie, Jay Giles Band, Deep Purple, Edgar Winter, Mott the Hoople, almost every 70s band that I loved, right? I had long hair. I'm a drummer, and I'm working with the most famous bands in the world. I'm riding my bike to this concert hall after high school because I didn't drive yet. So that was just high school. Then I went to college. I went to Boston University. I studied communications. When I was there, Howard Stern, the famous radio personality, was 2 years ahead of me at the same school. And he had a radio show even back then. This is the mid-late 70s. He had a radio show then. He was very, very funny. He was very tall. And I used to see him in the hallway because he's so tall. I met him. I didn't meet him then. I met him 20 years later in Hollywood. And we talked about our fun times at Boston University together. After college, I had a job at Columbia Pictures movie studio in New York City. And I got that job from a friend of mine from college, and I was a junior publicist for the summer of 1980. And it was a pretty cool place because, you know, I was friends with Brooke Shields. I met Fran Drescher. I met John Cassavetes. I met Steven Spielberg's publicist, Marvin, who I'm still friends with. I met some cool people. The problem was, Andy, I was 24 years old, and I was living on the Jersey Shore. And I had a job in Manhattan. Well, anyone who's commuted 2-4 hours a day on a bus into Manhattan is it's very hard to do, you know, especially in the rain and the snow, man. It's not easy. So I worked at Columbia Pictures the summer of 1980. And I worked closely with Brooke Shields and her mother on a movie called The Blue Lagoon, which is a very famous movie. It made Brooke famous. Brooke was 15 at the time, very nice girl. And she and I were friends at that time. After that summer, I said to my boss, I said, you know, it's too hard. I can't commute. It's just too hard for me. So they said, be well. Good luck to you. I then relocated to Los Angeles that fall of 1980. because I had a friend on Venice Beach. She let me sleep on her couch for a year. So my first year in LA, I came with $2,000, and Andy, about a month later, I was down to $6. And that's the truth. I was down to $6. I was smoking joints, eating pizza, and writing poetry on Venice Beach. I'm 24 years old. I'm young. I'm healthy. And I'm like, this is the greatest. I've never been happier in my life, right? I was penniless. I had no job, no car, no girlfriends. I had no connection. Slowly but surely, I got my foot into the door in Hollywood. My first job in Hollywood was at the American Film Institute, which is a very famous film college in Hollywood. I worked for the man who ran the film school, and I was there for about 2 years. And I met Robert Wise, the famous movie director who directed The Day the Earth Stood Still, one of my all-time favorite movies. The funny story about that is every time I went to go pee in the men's room at the American Film Institute, Mr. Wise had to pee also. So me and Robert Wise used to pee. I'm with the Academy Award winning director of The Day the Earth Stood Still. And every time we peed together. And I go, Mr. Wise, we have to stop meeting this way. And we would always make each other. I also met Michael Nesmith at the AFI. He was one of my heroes from the Monkees. After that job, I got a job at the Playboy Channel, of all things. I was the very first publicist for the Playboy Channel. And what sucked about that is I had just gotten married. So I got married and I'm literally working with Hugh Hefner and the prettiest Playboy girls in America and for 2.5 years. And my wife was not happy about that. I have to tell you, my wife was not happy.
I can't imagine why.
My Playboy era. From there, then I got a huge job at Columbia Pictures Television in Burbank. And then I met so many famous people. At that point, I was a senior publicist for a number of TV shows. I became friends with Mickey Dolenz from the Monkees. Mickey was my childhood hero. That's why I played the drums, because when I saw him at the age of 10, I fell in love with him. So when I met Mickey, it was 20 years later, and we used to have lunch together. I go, Mickey, you know, I play the drums my whole life because of you. And he goes, thanks, man. That's cool. I hear that all the time. So that was pretty cool. Madonna winked at me. Barbara Streisand winked at me. I waved to Clint Eastwood. I met Richard Dreyfuss. I met Jim Henson. Do you know what I mean? It's like when you work on a movie studio lot and you just walk around, everyone's there. Everyone, like everywhere you look, it's like, who am I going to see today? That was a killer great job. After that job, my division got laid off. Coca-Cola owned Columbia Pictures at the time. They laid off my whole division. The next job I got was with a very, very big PR firm in Hollywood. And my premier client was Jay Leno. And Jay Leno, the comedian, and he just had gotten The Tonight Show. So I represented Jay Leno for 2 years. And he's a very sweet guy. He's very much the guy that we see on TV. He's really a sweet guy. I used to hang out with him at The Tonight Show backstage. I also represented Sid Caesar, a very famous 50s comedian. So I represented National Lampoon magazine. So I was the comedian PR guy for whatever reason. Next job was at an even bigger PR firm. I was there for 8 years, and there I just developed a huge following of actors, writers, producers, animators, visual effects people, theme park producers. I just developed a huge following. So when I turned 40, 1996, I turned 40. And I had an epiphany to start my own business, which I did. And my business is called Asbury PR Agency. I grew up in Asbury Park. And so now this year, Andy, my business is 28. Oh, it's going to be 28 years old. I'm in Beverly Hills. This is my office in Beverly Hills. I've had probably 1,000 clients. I've been very, very fortunate to have this career that I've had. I've met hundreds of very famous people. I have great stories. I have great friends. I've made a good living. I sent 2 children through college. The last thing about my career really is this guy right here. This book came out last year, Flirting with Fame. A Hollywood publicist recalls 50 years of celebrity close encounters. And I have really cool photos in there. I have pictures of me with Steven Spielberg and Mel Brooks and Jerry Seinfeld and Sid Caesar and Alice Cooper and Steve Allen and a lot of very famous people. And, you know, when I during COVID, I wrote it during COVID. I'm like, you know, I've had quite a life. And just one day, Andy, I just sat down and I wrote all the celebrities I'd ever met, starting with Bruce Springsteen in the 70s. And there were pages and pages. So then I put it in chronological order. And then I have so many photos from my scrapbooks. I'm like, maybe this is a book. I wrote the book. It took me about 8 months. I wrote the book. I called a friend of mine. I said, hey, I just wrote this dopey book. What should I do with it? My friend is an author. He said, there's a publishing company in Florida called Bear Manor, B-E-A-R Manor Media. They love Hollywood books. I said, okay. And this is a true story, man. I emailed the owner of Bear Manor. I never heard of him in my life. I told him who I was. I told him what I had. I sent a few photos. He goes, Dan, not only am I publishing your book, here's your contract. So the book, the day I finished writing it, I got a publishing deal, which was, it was like a dream come true. I have to be honest. It was very cool. So I've had a very interesting career. I have great stories. When I met Meryl Streep, I was so nervous. I called her by the wrong name. You know, imagine you're shaking Meryl Streep's hand. Hi, right? Now, the woman next to me was my friend Carla. So the Meryl Streep comes down this line and meets all these people. And then my friend Carla goes, Miss Streep, it's so nice to meet you. My name is Carla from Warner Brothers. Okay. The next person was me and Meryl Streep. And this is true. Meryl Streep comes to me. I'm so nervous, Andy. I'm shaking Meryl Streep's hand. And I said, hello, Carla. It's so nice to meet you. Carla. I called Meryl Streep Carla. I mean, it's one of the greats. So I've made people cry laughing from that story. So I have wacky adventures, and it's very fortunate, and that's the history of my career.
And that's a hell of a life. That's the sort of life that people could only dream of, even a tenth of that. I think that was a kind of who's who of Hollywood and through the decades as well. That's just to give people some idea of, you know, your background and what you've done, Dan, right.
That's my career. I've made a living for like 45 years as a PR specialist. Correct.
And those skills are now transferring into what we're going to talk about shortly, the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance. But I'd like to ask, let's take you back then to your involvement in the UFO topic, because you yourself, you've had three substantial sightings, haven't you? Do you want to take us back to the first of those?
Sure. So that is very interesting, Andy, for a number of reasons. And I'll give you the shorthand. In 1970, March 1970, okay, I'm 14, almost 14 years old, Asbury Park, New Jersey, Jersey Shore. One day, my father picked me up from school, drove me home in his car. And it's about 3 o'clock in the afternoon, so it's daylight, okay? We're driving in the car in my hometown on my street, where I grew up. And I look through the windshield, and there's a huge silver V, like the letter V, like Victor. Huge silver V craft hovering above my father's car. Okay. Now this is pretty unusual to have a UFO like that hovering above my father's car. So I'm in the car. I'm a little kid. I go, Dad, stop the car. There's a UFO. Stop the car. Stop the car. I'm jumping up and down. My dad pulls the car over. We get out. We stand in front of the car. We look up. I'm jumping up and down. Dad, isn't this cool? Dad, a UFO. We're seeing the UFO. Isn't this cool? And Andy, this is true. My father looked at it like he's looking at his watch. He's like, couldn't care less. No interest of any kind. As though he'd seen it a million times. I never understood that reaction at that time. And that's part of the story. But I never understood why he looked at it like he wasn't excited. He wasn't afraid. He wasn't thrilled. He wasn't nervous. Nothing. Absolutely no reaction whatsoever. He goes, come on, kid, let's go home. We get back in the car. We go home. I call on a rotary phone. This is 1970. I call on a rotary phone, my hometown newspaper. And I said, hi, my name is Danny. I'm 14. I just saw a UFO with my dad in my neighborhood. And the lady at the local newspaper said, Sonny, I can't talk to you right now. We're getting hundreds of phone calls about this. I remember that very clearly. I can't talk to you. We're getting hundreds of phone calls about this. I have to go. She hung up. No article ever ran in the paper that week. Nothing ever ran. Now, a couple of things that are remarkable about that story. Number one, I completely forgot that happened for 47 years. I completely forgot about that event for 47 years. Okay, so now we cut to 2017. My dad passed away April 2017. A couple of days after he passed away, I went to a deli in Los Angeles to get a pastrami sandwich and to think about my dad and to be alone. And I swear to you, this is true. I ordered my sandwich. I sat at the table. I looked out through the window, and out of absolutely nowhere, a beam, a powerful beam of light or energy or something from above zapped into my head really hard, like bang into my head. Sorry. And through my eyes like this, it projected a home movie in the air, like a digital home movie, like I'm looking at you right now, of the 1970 UFO sighting I had with my father. I watched it at this deli in 2017. I'm like, oh my God, I forgot all about that. That's incredible, right? So when I'm watching it, this time I'm watching it as an observer, and I see at the end of that event, my dad winked at me. My dad winked at me and said, come on, let's go home. Winked at me. Now keep that in mind. So then this thing played for about maybe 20 seconds and then it vanished. Okay. Then I asked my waiter for a pen and he gave me a pen. On the table before me at the deli was a paper placemat. I took the pen in my right hand and I wrote down. Now my hand wrote down three things, and this wasn't me. This was my hand. So it's called automatic writing, which I never did before. My hand wrote, write a book about benevolent aliens. Okay. Then the next line, lead character's father knew about UFOs. And then the third line was ATC, ATC, all capital letters. And then my hand stopped moving. Okay. So I just had this digital home movie from 47 years ago. This is 3 days after my dad died. And I wrote this down. Well, I'm looking at ATC and I realized after a while, I came up with After They Came, ATC. So this book was given to me as a gift at the deli. Now, some people think it was ET delivered to me. I like to think my dad gave it to me from heaven. But this book was divinely inspired, and that's a true story. And I just went there to get a sandwich. I came home and wrote a book. Now, the book is about benevolent aliens who come to Earth, save mankind. The lead character is a very depressed guy. His life sucks. He's turned 70. He hates his life. He decides to drown himself on his 70th birthday because he's miserable. He swims out to sea off the coast of Malibu in California. He's drowning. As he's drowning, an enormous craft comes out of the Pacific, beams him on board, and then this craft slowly travels to above Dodger Stadium. I had to pick Dodger Stadium. And then it's very much a tribute to the day the Earth stood still, meets Close Encounters, meets E.T., meets It's Wonderful Life. That's how I describe this book. It's fiction. But at Dodger Stadium, all the media are there, all the army and police and all that are there. And two tall, white Nordic aliens, man and woman, gorgeous, 7 foot tall, long white hair, beam down and say, people of Earth, don't panic. We're here to help you. We love you. Everything's cool. We've been monitoring your planet for hundreds of thousands of years. We helped to craft mankind. Don't be afraid of us. We came here to save the life of this man. Okay. So now this guy, Jonathan Tuckerman, who they just saved from drowning, they beam him down onto second base. He's naked because he swam out to sea and he's all just dripping wet. And they say, this man is special to us. Be kind to him. We have a relationship with this guy. Bring your problems on Earth. Bring your problems to this man. He is our conduit to you. We will only deal with him. Okay. So then the aliens beam back. The ship vanishes. Now this guy, 70 years old, it's his birthday. He just drowned himself. Now, all the media and these cops and ambulances and military guys, they're like, who the hell are you? Right? And he looks up and he's like, I have no idea what's happening. I don't have the slightest idea what's happening. That's the first 15 pages of the book. He goes on to meet the president. It's in the book. I base her on Oprah Winfrey because at the time I wrote it, Oprah Winfrey was considering running for president. She gives him an office in the United Nations. He runs this office. He's reunited with his two long-lost children. And every month for a year, they meet with the extraterrestrials and they say, can you eliminate nuclear weapons? And the aliens do. There are people starving around the world. Can you feed them? The aliens provide manna from heaven, which is from the book of Genesis in the Jewish Bible. There are people around the world that don't have clean water. The aliens provide clean water. We have all these diseases. The aliens provide medication to cure any disease. So over the course of a year, this guy, Jonathan Tuckerman at the UN, they beam him. He goes to the roof of the UN once a month, beams on board the ship, meets with these two aliens. They cure all of them. So in a year's time, all of mankind's major problems have been solved a year later. He wins the Nobel Prize. His best friend's the president of the United States. He's reunited with his children. He meets this beautiful female doctor who he marries. He becomes a millionaire from some of the technology the aliens give him. So it's very much, it's a wonderful life, right? On page one, he's drowning because he hates his life. And by the end of the book, he's the most beloved man in the world. It's a fairy tale. He's beloved. He's accomplished a great deal. He's friends with extraterrestrials. Now, there are many, many conflicts along the way, which I won't get into. You have to read the book. But I was given this book, truly, honest to God, and I can't explain it. It was given to me, I think, by my father. Now we got to talk about my father. Anyway, after this book came out, Nick Pope gave me a wonderful quote. It's on the front cover of my book. Nick Pope said, "A delightful tale of wonder and hope." It's actually, I put it on the cover of my book. Richard Dolan liked it. Lynn Cutai, Chase Klutsky, Travis Walton said it should be a movie. Kathleen Martin thought it was genius. I've been blessed, you know, I really was, because I was given a gift. I am a writer. I've been a writer since the eighth grade. Always got A pluses on my writing. This book was given unto me as a gift. Now let's talk about my father. And keep in mind, my dad and I saw the UFO together. He was bored, and then he winked at me, right? My father worked for the U.S. Army for 45 years, 1951 to 1996. U.S. Army, Fort Monmouth, New Jersey. It's an Army base. He was a civilian. He was like a GS 14, 15, 16, very high up. He was a genius, my father. He was an electronics engineer and a physicist. He never talked about his work to my mother or me or my two brothers. He just didn't. He didn't talk about his work. If my whole life, "Dad, what do you do for a living?" He would say, "I helped America win the Cold War." That's the only thing my father ever said. But two times ever. Once he said, out of nowhere, he goes, "You know, Danny, I helped invent military drones." And I'm like, "Okay, Dad, can we get some ice cream?" You know, I'm probably 10 years old, right? I have no idea what he's talking about, right? And another time, he said, "You know, I invented a drone. It looks like a flying garbage can. It's flying over North Vietnam. It takes film, it takes photographs. It's in the sky. It takes photographs of the targets that we want to survey." And then he said, "The little rolls of film are parachuted out with little parachutes from this drone with little beeping red, you know, beep, beacons. So our army men can find the film on the ground." Okay. Now, my dad worked in the 50s, 60s, 70s, right? There was no digital then. So that's how they delivered film from spycraft. They dropped it down, rolls of film, you know, Kodak probably film. Those are the only things he ever said to me. So after he died, I researched Fort Monmouth, New Jersey, where my dad worked. The engineers at Fort Monmouth were involved with the Manhattan Project. I never knew that. They have thousands of patents for drones, missiles, and radar. Thousands of patents were created there. Werner von Braun visited there. There's proof of that a few times he was there. I found a newsletter about my dad after he died in one of my scrapbooks, and it confirmed he was the head of their military drone program. I have that in writing from 1985. It was the only thing I ever saw that profiled my father. I called my mother after he died, and I said, "Mom, did Dad ever talk about aliens or UFOs by any chance?" She told me a story, Andy, I'd never heard before. She said, in the early 50s, They took your father at Fort Monmouth Army Base deep into the vaults, and they showed him something top secret. He came home. He was pale and shaky and nervous. And my mother said, honey, what's wrong? And my father said, I saw something today. It's above top secret. And I can never tell you as long as I live. I can never tell anyone as long as I live. And my mother said, and this was after he died in 2017. She said, Danny, your father was never the same after that. Okay, now let's put the clues together. My dad worked for the Army for 45 years. I know he had top secret clearance. He went to the Pentagon all the time. He went to White Missiles Testing Range all the time. He once told me President Kennedy and President Johnson read some of his reports. He told me that when I was probably 9 or 10. So presidents read his reports. He and I saw a UFO together that bored him, right? It was no interest whatsoever. My father winked at me, Andy. Think about that. He winked at me, okay? Top secret clearance. He saw something top secret in the 50s that my mother told me about. So we put all those clues together. And then right after he died, I got zapped with that whole movie and the book. So here's my theory. My theory is, my father was involved. I feel this in my heart. I can't prove it, but I feel in my heart. My father was involved with reverse engineering of retrieved UFO technology. He helped use that technology to create military drones, because I know that was absolutely, he did create military drones. For my father to see a major UFO like we saw and not be excited or scared and wink at me, okay, I've told that story around the world, and George Norrie even said, you know, Dan, when he winked at you, he was telling you he knew what that was. And I said, George, I know, I know. I didn't know at the time. So that's who my father was. And I think that my father gave me this book after he passed as a gift. And I've told, my father was a brilliant guy. He was very sweet, very soft-spoken, never bragged. He said, Dan, I'm a patriot. I help America win the Cold War. There's nothing I wouldn't do for our country. He was a real patriot. He never would have revealed a top secret, okay? Never, not even to my mother. Now, in those days, people have asked me, how come your dad didn't tell anybody? You know, the answer, Andy, is one word, pension, pension. That era, my dad and his era, they worked till 65. They worked their asses off. They wanted that pension, right? Because then they could retire. My dad and his second wife retired in Florida. They had a lovely life in Florida for many years. He was not going to jeopardize his pension, or he was not going to go to jail. He was not going to tell me, Danny, I work with UFOs. I mean, that wasn't going to happen. Now, today we have people like a David Grush who has the courage and the foresight, right, to come forward and reveal this stuff. My dad and the old school era, the guys from the 50s, that wasn't going to happen. So that's my big, I have two other sightings, but that's really the big story.
Well, first off, thank you for sharing that, Dan, because it's a very interesting and very emotive one as well, especially with your father and his passing. First thing I appreciate is the fact you're not jumping to the conclusion that ET's beamed, you know, this memory into your head or gave you a download. And you've said yourself, you feel that it was from your father. So you're open to the fact, you know, you're not sure what it is, but you've got this gut feeling as to why that came. And I think a lot of the listeners and viewers can appreciate that open-minded, you know, I don't know, but here's what I think, which is always helpful. Why do you think you got that then? Why so soon after? Why that time? Why at that moment?
Well, great question. Our mutual friend, Steve Bassett, is one of my best friends. I told Steve Bassett this story. He said, Dad, that sounds like an ET download. And I said, Steven, you know what? That may be well and true. That may be. But I think in my heart, I'd like to think it was my dad from heaven. So, you know, I don't know. I mean, I've had paranormal things happen to me my whole entire life. I have a book, Andy, coming out this May, a brand new book. It's called My Paranormal Life. Maybe I can come back on. We'll talk about that. It comes out in May. It's ghosts and voices and things that I've been told that came true. It's really quite remarkable. Okay, so why that week? Well, this is pretty interesting. That same week, okay, that my dad died, three other things happened. He came to me in my bedroom in the middle of the night, turned on my lamp. My lamp is a touch lamp in my bedroom. It turned on and off and on and off at 3 a.m. It could only turn on and off if someone's touching it, okay? So I woke up. I saw that. This is the same week he died. I'm like, Dad? Right? And then it stopped. Also the same week, I play the drums. If you can see way in the back behind me, there's a little toy drum set back there. That used to be in my bedroom. My dad gave that to me many years ago as a gift. The same week my dad died, Andy, 3 a.m, I wake up. The cymbals are clank, 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 clang, clanging like someone's with their fingers. Mm-hmm. I go, Dad, is that you? Well, who else could it have been? It had to be him. And here's a killer, this one. 4 days after he died, I'm in Silicon Valley for a business trip. I'm at a hotel. It's probably three in the morning, middle of the night. I'm fast asleep at a hotel bed. And I heard, and I swear to you, this is true, from underneath my bed, I heard, Danny, Jeannie changed my will. That loud. Now, Jeannie was my father's second wife. My dad had severe Alzheimer's the last year of his life. He didn't know who he was. Danny, Jeannie changed my will. I heard it that loud, Andy. I swear to you, I sat up in bed. I looked around. I looked under the bed to see if my father's ghost was there. And I'm like, oh, my God. It turns out my brothers and I hired an attorney. My mother, she was never my stepmother. She's my father's wife. She changed my father's will. She changed his insurance policies when he had Alzheimer's. And that's a whole legal story that I want to get into. But my dad told me that from the other side. My dad had a channel to me. Clearly, he told me about that. He did my lamp. He played with my drums and gave me a book. My dad gave me a book. So I know it was him. I know it was him because it was. I don't claim to be any clairvoyant or brilliant genius or psychic. I don't claim to be any of those things. But I've had many dozens of paranormal experiences from the age of 5. That was very, very powerful. And my dad, from his love from the other side, from his love to me, I'm the oldest son he had. He gave me this information from the other side.
And one other thing from that early sighting with your father, why do you think that reaction, why the non-reaction almost, isn't it? You know, there was no fear for you, no fear for your safety. There was, like you say, almost a boredom on his part. And if you're remembering it correctly, it's almost like it was just another thing, you know, being stuck in traffic.
Well, right, exactly. So, okay, in the moment in 1970, again, I'm 3 months from being 14. I'm 13 years old. I'm a kid, man. I was super excited. For me, this was like, this is before Star Wars or anything, but this is like Flash Gordon. Or I loved Lost in Space. Remember that show, Lost in Space?
Okay, I remember the movie that was made in the 90s. Yeah.
Yeah, because I have shoes older than you, Andy. I mean, you know, I'm a child of the 50s and 60s. So the original Lost in Space with Will Robinson, you know, warning Will Robinson. Yeah. Well, I grew up on that. So for me to see this thing was like the early Star Trek or this is 1970. Early Star Trek maybe, or Lost in Space, or Flash Gordon. I'm like, Dad, look, isn't this great? And I was thrilled, right? I wasn't scared. And my dad looked at it like he was looking at a head of lettuce in the supermarket. Here's why I think. If my dad had a hand in creating that craft, right? Or his workplace, because it probably came from Fort Monmouth, which was nearby. Army Fort was nearby. If it came from Fort Monmouth, his workplace, he was familiar with that. I think that was a man-made military drone, okay? I think the Army created that drone. using reverse engineered technology. There was no propellers. There was no smoke. It was silent. It floated like a butterfly. It floated like this. It's dead sun, huge. Each wing was maybe the size of two school buses. Okay. So imagine silver, bright silver V. And you look at it and you go, what on earth is that thing? I personally don't think aliens were in that ship that day. Okay. I think my dad, there's no way to know. He passed. And even at the end, he had Alzheimer's. But I think my dad knew what that was, knew how it worked. Now, again, and also after he died, my mother said he went to White Sands Missile Range all the time. They tested drones. I've seen documentaries. They tested experimental aircraft and drones for years and years and years at White Sands. You know, my dad was out of town a lot from New Jersey. He went on travel quite a lot. He probably saw, you know, prototype, experimental things, drones that he had a hand in. And the key, again, the key man, he winked at me. And the wink says, here's what it said. Danny, I know what that is. I can't tell you. But everything's cool, right? Now, I think, Andy, if you or I saw that, you know, together, we'd be jumping up and down. We'd be hugging, right? We'd be, you and I would be high-fiving, right? Look, isn't this great? We would be hugging, kissing, taking pictures of their phones, right? My dad was like it was common, like he was looking at his car at the car wash, commonplace. There is no other explanation. I can't explain it other than I truly believe in my heart that he knew what it was. I think it was a man-made craft using alien technology. Can't prove it. Wish I could have talked to my dad more at the end of his life. He didn't even know who I was. Last time I saw him, he didn't know who I was. But then he passed, and suddenly, right, he's in my bedroom in the middle of the night, and he's at the deli giving me a book. So on the other side, my dad, this has only happened the first couple of weeks after he died. I've not heard from my dad since then. I do dream about him quite often. I see him in dreams. In fact, in dreams, several times in dreams, I will say to my dad, Dad, you look great, but you're dead. And he goes, yeah, I know I'm dead, but I really wish I wasn't. He has said that to me in dreams at least five times. So my dad has a presence on the other side. And it's all I can tell you, as God is my witness, I swear on my daughter, what I'm telling you is true. My dad just has a presence on the other side for whatever reason. He had a connection. My two brothers didn't get this information. I did.
And before we get to the HDA, you mentioned there's two other sightings, but that's the substantial one, but you've had two others.
The third one is very substantial. It you know, if Andy, if I just told you the third one alone ever, you'd say, wow, what a great story. But it doesn't compare to my 1970, man. That's like that's my greatest hit story, that one. I mean, that's a hard one to top. I'll do real quick. In 1996, was the second sighting. I had been married and divorced. I had two kids. I have two kids. At the time, my son was 8. My daughter was 6. My ex-wife and my kids moved out to Lancaster, California, which is the high desert. It's about an hour and a half from LA, and it's near Edwards Air Force Base. So keep that in mind. My son turned 8. He wanted a telescope for his birthday. I saw my kids. I was divorced at this time, unfortunately. I saw my kids every weekend. I used to drive out there and spend the weekends with my children. I've never missed a weekend. So my son wanted a telescope for his 8th birthday. This is May 1996. I got him a telescope, went out there, and on his birthday night, my son and I, in his little pajamas, were watching the sky with the telescope. And, you know, you see the moon, you see Saturn, you see all the cool stuff they see with a telescope. And we had a wonderful time. As we were going to pack it up to go for me to put him to bed, suddenly, a white, off-color white light appeared in the far right hand of the sky. I would call it eggshell color, like white yellow-ish, and kind of shaped like an egg, okay? It was far, far in the right-hand corner of the sky, but very, very bright. And I said, Jordan, look, there's a satellite. And now we see it in there, and it goes really, really fast in a straight line all across the sky, Andy, in a straight line, bright, consistent, dead straight line, right, all the way across to the left part of the sky. Now it's like way over here, okay? And I said to my son, look, how cool is this satellite? It has to be, clearly. Then it stopped in place, Andy, for about 30 seconds, right? And I thought, oh my God, that satellite's going to fall to Earth. It's going to plummet to Earth. I really thought that, honest to God. It stopped for 30 seconds in place. Then it went all the way back, same way it came from, same line. And then it vanished. Okay, that wasn't a plane, helicopter, comet, meteoroid, asteroid, helicopter, rocket, missile. No, there's no way. Whatever that was, it was an extraordinary vehicle. Now, I told that story again all over the world. You know Jimmy Church?
Yeah.
You know Jimmy? I told that on Jimmy. Jimmy says, Dan, you know, they test experimental UFO craft at Edwards Air Force Base all the time. And he said that was probably a military craft they were testing. Now, so Jimmy nailed that one because my ex-wife lived near Edwards Air Force Base, okay? So I do believe that that one was military as well. I don't think that was ET. The third and final UFO I ever saw. Are you familiar with James Gilliland and Esetti Ranch?
Yes.
Okay. All right. So maybe for your viewers who don't know, James Gilliland is like a cleric, almost like a religious holy man, spiritual, very spiritual man. I had joined MUFON in 2007 in LA, and he gave a presentation in 2008 about the Esetti Ranch. And he said, you know, it's a UFO hotspot. We see UFOs all the time. He showed all kinds of videos and still pictures of UFOs on his property. The Esetti Ranch, I don't know how many acres, maybe it's 100 acres, Washington State at the base of Mount Adams. Okay, so he said that year in 08, he said, I'm having an open house, 4th of July weekend, 08, come and we'll watch the skies together. I had a girlfriend at the time named Barbara. She and I went. We spent 3 days, Friday, Saturday, Sunday, at James Gilliland's Esetti Ranch with about 250 other people. During the daytime, they had tents set up. They had, I think Nick Pope was there. William Henry, I remember, was there. They showed a film about orbs, which I had never heard of. They showed films about the pyramids and the crop circles and all the fun stuff, you know. Now, I'm fairly new to that stuff. And 07, 08 is when I got into this field, 07, 08. I'm not an old timer. So I was fascinated. At night, Andy, they made a bonfire on the field at the base of Mount Adams, which is a famous mountain. Kenneth Arnold saw his 9 UFOs at Mount Rainier or a different mountain within that same mountain range.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. So they made a bonfire at night. Women were singing and dancing around the bonfire. Guys were playing guitars and tambourines. I took a picture of my girlfriend Barbara dancing with this other girl, and we developed the picture, digital picture. It was filled, and I have this photo, thousands of orbs, thousands of, you couldn't see it with your naked eye, but on the film, thousands of orbs. I called it the orb field. So remarkable. This is a very active place. So for anyway, Friday during the day, seminars, lectures, films, look up in the sky for hours and hours. Friday night, absolutely nothing. Okay, fine. Saturday, the next day, Nick Pope, whatever, whoever spoke, films, lectures, seminars, bonfire, look up in the sky. And you know, after a while, Andy, you know this, when you look in the sky for a while, your neck starts to hurt, man, after a while, right? So looking up at the sky, Saturday night, hours, nothing, nothing. I'm thinking, man, nothing's going to happen. We're not going to see anything. Third and final night, Sunday, lecture, seminars, films, bonfire, looking up at night for maybe an hour, 2 hours. And it was the last night. And there's like 200 cars on the property. And now this is true, man. I reached into my pocket. I got my keys. I go, Barbara, my girlfriend. I said, you know, if we leave right now, we could beat the rush. We could beat all these other cars. I had the keys in my hand. And at that moment, a black craft out of nowhere, black craft came and hovered 300 feet above our heads, about 250 people above where the bonfire was, hovered. Now, It was very black. So I don't know the size. I don't know the shape. It was against the black night sky. Couldn't tell the size or shape. But it stopped, right? It blocked out the starlight and the moonlight. So we look up, and it was just like one of those classic scenes, you know, from the X-Files, when they all look up and like the beam comes down.
Yeah.
On the bottom of this craft, and this is all true, man, the bottom of the craft had like a glass or crystal bulb, like a lamp, huge lamp, mm-hmm. crystal bulb. Bright emerald green light came on, like the color of emerald green from The Wizard of Oz. Beautiful. Came on, and then it beamed down above all of us, like beep, 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 beep. Like, you know, it didn't make a noise, but it was like it was like Morse code, okay, with mm-hmm. light. Andy, I looked up. I was crying. I was like, oh, my God, this is remarkable. I was crying, okay? I felt it, and I swear to you, I felt it here in my heart. I could still feel it now to this day. This is in 08. It was the message I felt was, hello, we're here. We know you've been waiting for us for a couple of days. We're sorry we're late, you know. We love you. Everything's cool. Don't be afraid of us. We were in the neighborhood. Just wanted to say hello. Enjoy your evening. Be peaceful. Love one another. Okay? Because it flashed on and off maybe 12 times or so. Beautiful. Emerald green. Gorgeous light. And then the light stopped. The craft was there. And then, shoo, took off. Now, people were crying. I mean, I was crying. People, Barbara, my girlfriend, we were sobbing, like holding each other. People are hugging and kissing. It was a remarkable moment in my life. I think, now let's put all this together. That message I got, I think, is part of my book, right? Now, I wrote the book 10 years later. But the message I got was, you know, we're here, we're cool, we love you, everything's fine. That's part of my book, blended in with whatever message my dad gave me. Now, did those aliens give me the book from the deli? The 2008 aliens, they gave me a message. So I think, here's what I think. I think they opened my mind and my heart. I'll tell you, after that experience, I became a nicer person. I really did. I became a nicer, much more understanding, much more open person in general from that event. But I think they opened my aura, whatever they opened, to accept things. And then when my dad died and the book idea came to me, I was open to it. I think the 08 and my dad's thing are somehow related. I can't, who knows? Can't prove it. But that third sighting really was very impactful for me personally.
No, I can understand why. I think people look at these, I mean, that's a mass sighting. That's 250 people. That's a lot. I take it there was no pictures, videos, 07, 08, camera phone, text, probably not particularly good still at that point, that everyone's going to be, and it's a black craft against the sky, but then there was a light, so was there nothing taken?
You know, I'll tell you the truth, it happened so quickly, I didn't see anybody. Well, okay, in 08, I really don't know. Were there camera phones in 08? I don't remember.
Yeah, but not particularly good ones, but there were, yeah.
Okay, so think about this, right? It's probably 10 o'clock at night. You're dancing around a bonfire and you're looking up and you're thinking, how am I going to get my car out of this parking lot mess? And this thing comes out of nowhere, hovers for maybe a minute. I mean, maybe a minute, maybe that long. And this beautiful light. Now, are you going to think, Andy, I had a video camera with me. I'll confess, right? I had it with me. I didn't think to put it up. Why? I wanted to enjoy experience. This is a once in a lifetime experience. I didn't even think, I had it in my hand. I didn't think to do this. I don't think anyone did. If they did, I've never seen those photos. But
and to be fair, Dan, I've spoken to a lot of guests and listeners who say when they've had a sighting, they actually didn't think to do it. Some have, but many have said, you know what, it didn't come across. And more recently, obviously, with really fancy iPhones or Samsungs, and they've said, you know what, I didn't think to get my phone out. It just happened and I was concentrating on it or whatever, and it just wasn't in the mind. So I can appreciate that.
That's exactly correct. But it was a very profound moment. I've carried that with me for all these years. So those are the three, 70 with my dad, the one with my son. Now, what's interesting, some people have said, and I didn't realize, I saw a UFO with my dad, and then 28 years later, I saw one with my son, right? Father, son. That's kind of cool. And then the third one I saw with a girlfriend, we broke up about a year later. But each of my three experiences, I was with another person. So that's kind of cool, I guess. You know, I don't know.
Yeah, shared experience, absolutely. And listen, that probably brings us full circle, and that's nicely wrapped up why you have an interest in the UFO topic, for your background, the sightings, the experiences, the kind of emotion of it for you, and all that's led you to the point now where you're the chairman and co-founder of the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance with Stephen Bassett. Do you want to give us an idea of how did that come around? Obviously, official launch was back in November 2023.
Sure. It's really been very profound, Andy. So the book, I wrote the book in 2017, 2018 is when I wrote it. And then I pitched it to publishers for many years and I had no luck. But then I got lucky in the end of 2021. So it came out in 2020. When did my book come out? I'm sorry. I got a deal in 2022 and it was published March 1st. In fact, exactly a year ago, right? March 1st, 2023, it got published, which meant it came out to the world. So once it got published, the first thing I did was I went to AlienCon in Pasadena, California last year. It was the first weekend of March, exactly a year ago right now. And I gave a copy to Giorgio Tsoukalos, who I'd known from the past. I gave a copy to Eric Von Daniken, which was really cool. I literally handed it to him. He goes, "Oh, I haven't read this one." I go, "Eric, it just came out yesterday. That's why you haven't read this one yet." I gave a copy to Paul Hynek and George Knapp and Jeremy Corbell and William Henry and Michael Childress and, you know, and Nick Pope. I'd met him. I'd talked to him previously the year before, but I met him in person. So that was really cool, AlienCon. Now, 2 weeks later, late March last year, I went to UFOCon in San Francisco. And there, I happened to listen to Steve Bassett give a presentation about disclosure. Now, I knew who Steve Bassett was from Ancient Aliens and other documentaries. But honestly, I didn't know really about disclosure, the idea of it, the legal ramifications, the incredible activities of people like Steve Bassett for many, many years to have disclosure happen. I really didn't know the big picture of disclosure. I didn't. This is only 1 year ago now. So I went to the lecture. My brother was with me. After the lecture, I met Stephen in the restaurant at the hotel. I said, "I really enjoyed your lecture. My name is Dan." I gave him a copy of my book. I said, "If you're ever in LA, I'd love to have a lunch with you." And he goes, "What do you do, Dan?" I said, "I'm a publicist." He goes, "I need a publicist." So we exchanged business cards. And we left it at that. 2 months later, now it's the end of May last year, the tail end of May last year. Steve Bassett's in LA. He calls me. He goes, "Hey, let's have a lunch." I said, "Okay, we'll have lunch." So we had lunch in Hollywood. He told me his life story. I told him my life story. At the end of that conversation, he looked at me. He goes, "Dan, what can we do together?" And Andy, this is true, man. I went like this. I looked up, thought for a minute, and I looked back and I said, "We're going to create the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance." It came to me like a light bulb. It just came to me. And he goes, "That's right. Exactly. Perfect. That's it." We shook hands. That weekend was Contact in the Desert. Stephen took me as his guest to my first Contact in the Desert last year. And I met, you know, everybody else who I hadn't met previously. And, you know, Nick Pope said, "Yeah, I want to join." George Norrie said, "Dan, I want to join." Richard Dolan, "Yeah, I want to join." Everybody. It was an idea. I had an idea. Stephen and I shook on it. We didn't know what it was, really. Didn't quite know. All last summer and into last fall, we met with Paul Hynek. We met with a guy named Sean West. Sean West is the agent to the UFO stars here in Hollywood. We met with Jeff Stein, who's a very famous music video director. He's huge into this topic. Stephen put his friends up. I put my friends and colleagues up. We blended them together. We created a real alliance of people. My daughter is a gifted graphic artist. My daughter came up with the logo. She created the website, and we started populating our friends and colleagues and peers into there. We officially, I think we're up to 150, 160 members now. We have Shirley MacLaine as a member. She's a movie star. We have Thomas Jane. He's a movie star. We have Dee Wallace. She's a movie star. We have Dave Foley. He's a TV comedy star. We have prominent writers, directors, producers on the Hollywood side. On the UAP ET side, well, we have Bassett. We have Nick Pope. We have Richard Dolan. We have Linda Moulton Howe. We have Jason Martell. We have Katie Page. We have George Norrie. I mean, it's a who's who. It's a who's who. Everybody loved this idea, Andy. It just, you know, it was a cool idea that I had at the right moment. I had it. It came to me very quickly. Stephen and I feel that we were meant to be friends. We are. He's the co-founder. I'm the co-founder. I'm the chairman. He's the exec director. I'm based in LA. He's based in Washington, D.C. We propelled this thing together with my daughter's help. And we launched on November 2nd last year in Hollywood, officially launched at an event in Hollywood. We've gotten some nice press in the last few months. And on March 17th, we are doing an event in LA, March 17th, the making of Project Blue Book, the TV series. We have about 100 people coming. And we're going to present the making of that History Channel show called Project Blue Book. The producers are going to do a dog and pony show for us. And we have a newsletter called The Wow Signal. We have a Slack channel for our members to talk to each other. The essential idea of the HDA is we're uniting UAP and ET researchers, advocates, and experiencers with Hollywood storytellers. That is people around the world. It's not Hollywood the city. It's Hollywood the idea. It's the entertainment industry. People around the world, documentary filmmakers, feature filmmakers, TV show producers, authors. That's another thing, authors. We're putting those storytellers with people who have real stories like I shared with you. I have real stories to propel the next era of documentaries, feature films, books, and TV shows so that these experiencer stories don't get lost, you know, so that they're recorded, because Stephen Bassett is working with Danny Sheehan, a very famous attorney in Washington. They are actively working with Congress to make Big D disclosure happen. Hopefully this year. Big D disclosure is President Biden would go on TV, say, look, I have something to tell you. Extraterrestrial life exists. They've been visiting Earth for a long time. We've known about this. We felt it was national security. We had to keep it from you. Now's the time we feel has come for us to share this information with you. We'll share more information with you as we move forward in the future. But yes, extraterrestrial life is real. That's Big D disclosure. Steve Bassett thinks it's going to happen this year. He's convinced. He's working with Danny Sheehan and the New Paradigm Institute in Washington to propel that with Congress and lawyers. And then a few weeks ago, I attended a seminar by Nick Pope. And Nick Pope said, you know, disclosure might not be all, you know, angels singing and harps playing and happiness and joy. He said, you know, some extraterrestrial races could be demonic. They could be evil. It could be partly why the government never shared this information with us. And he basically said, we should go into disclosure with our eyes open, because it might not be all like in my book. You know, they're here to solve all the problems.
Yeah.
So I know the Steve Bassett angels and everyone happy and dancing in the streets. And I know Nick Pope, he's a friend of mine, and he's like, let's be cautious. This might not be the greatest thing ever. So we don't know. We don't know what disclosure will bring, but my group, Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, and people in Washington, we're all moving, trying to propel the idea of disclosure and try to move it forward.
No, that's fair and refreshing to hear Nick Pope say that from his point of view. Again, Nick can be a divisive character depending on where you sit in this conversation, but To be really fair, I don't think there's any figure in the UFO topic who can't be divisive, depending on where you fall on the conversation. I think that was one of the things that came last time when Serena mentioned being mentored by Stephen Greer. Stephen Greer's one of those, he's got a huge fan base who, like him, they appreciate his work and his efforts over the decades. And also, he has a very set narrative that he doesn't deviate from, which for a lot of people is an issue, and I would be one of those. But then on the other side, you've got a huge swath of journalists, filmmakers who are in with many of the military or government folks, Chris Mellon, Luis Elizondo, Ross Coulthart, Jeremy Corbell, George Knapp, all seem to be on one sort of side. And there's just all these different factions within the UFO talking community. So I suppose what I'm trying to ask is, how do you make sure that you have the right mix of people within the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, that you're representing not too many cooks spoil the broth, but enough of the populace that it's not just love and light beings and starseed ascensions, for example?
That's a great question. We are a neutral entity that is trying to embrace people who are truly in their hearts and their minds open to this topic. Okay. We have invited literally everyone you could think of. Okay. We have invited, I and Stephen have invited everyone you could think of. Many people chose to not join us, Andy. For example, and I don't think he'd mind if I say this, Bryce Sable, brilliant filmmaker, TV producer. He declined. He felt that it was not appropriate for him to join. We've reached out to everyone you could think of. If they're not on our website already, like Whitley Strieber just joined last week. Mm-hmm. I met him and he said, sure, I'd love to. Linda Moulton Howe joined last week. I met her. She said, I'd love to. The people that are on want to be on. They're into sharing ideas and movie projects and scripts and things. If they're not on there, I guess what I'm saying is they've been invited. Yep. So we're not discriminating against anyone. Now there are, and I don't want to say this, but there are some tinfoil hat people, you know, like, you know, aliens abduct me every night in my sleep, and I'm married Bigfoot. And, you know, I live in a crop circle. Okay. Thank you very much. We'll keep you in mind. Very gentle, right? There are people that we turn down. But Stephen and I, and we have an executive committee, we essentially vet most of our members. If you look at the site, man, we have major people. You know, we have a lady from Los Alamos Labs who just joined. We have scientists. We have PhDs in there. We have we've invited Giorgio and Eric Von Daniken. They said thanks, but you know, we wish you luck. Good luck. I invited William Shatner. William Shatner said through his person, very cool group. I wish you all the best. I'd rather not for me. Okay. So you know, we're trying to get Danny Aykroyd to join. Stephen Bassett has the line in with Danny Aykroyd. We'd love to have him. I've reached out to Joe Rogan several times, no response. So we are pursuing those who make sense for us, who are well into the field. We only launched November 2nd. Mm. We're a baby. Oh, can I talk about donations?
Yes, go for it. Yeah, I was just about to ask. You've started those. I know Serena mentioned last time that obviously you were going to be looking for that, but those are active now.
Right. Okay. So when Serena was on, we weren't even a corporation yet. Okay. So for everyone out there, Andy's audience, I really appreciate this opportunity. The Hollywood Disclosure Alliance, check it out, hollywooddisclosurealliance.org. Everything's up there. We just became a recognized nonprofit corporation. We are a 501c3. What does that mean? That means anyone who makes a donation to our cause of promoting disclosure through the media, essentially what we want to do is advance the idea of disclosure across all media, film, TV, and books. Anyone who'd like to make a donation, we just set up our donations page last week. So go to hollywooddisclosurealliance.org. please check out the donate button. All the information on how to donate is there. You'll get a receipt that says thank you for your tax-exempt donation. We greatly appreciate it. You'll be added to our website as a supporting member. You'll be invited to our events, our live events, and our online events that are coming up later this year. We have a monthly newsletter called The Wow Signal, which I publish and edit, The Wow Signal. It's all our news from our members. We have a dedicated Slack channel for all of our almost 200 members to have private conversations where they share stories, they share TV shows, they share film news. It's really quite cool, Andy. Actually, you know, if you'd like to join, let me know. I'll put you in there. So we are a growing community of like-minded people. We have some of the top people in the world. Richard Dolan and his wife Tracy have become friends of mine, which is very, very cool. Nick Pope, I took him to dinner recently. He's a friend of mine. Steve Bassett's like my best friend. In the last year, man, it all happened in the last year for me personally. It's been a remarkable year. But please, please, please consider a donation to help us propel this further. HollywoodDisclosureAlliance.org, and then click the donate button, and then everything is up there on the website. Really appreciate it.
No, that's fine, Dan. And I just want to finish off asking, where do you want the HDA to be by the end of this year? You know, obviously, blue sky thinking is we get capital D disclosure. However, let's forget about that for a moment. It doesn't happen. What do you want the HDA to realistically achieve?
What a wonderful question. Something we're talking about, which I'd like to see happen, is, you know, at the end of movies, Andy, at the end of a movie, it'll say, no animals were harmed during the making of this film. I think that's the ASPCA, right? There's another group here in LA that I launched 30 years ago called the Environmental Media Association. They put their stamp of approval on films and TV shows that propel environmental safety, you know, recycle, be kind to the environment, carpool, get your car smog checked. Okay, there's an EMA seal of approval. We've discussed the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance seal of approval to be at the end of some TV shows and documentaries that says, you know, this project has been vetted and approved by the Hollywood Disclosure Alliance with our little logo at the bottom. That's something we have to talk to our lawyer about. Perhaps we would have an HDA dedicated podcast for our members. I have my own podcast, as you mentioned earlier. I have my own podcast called Live from Hollywood. It's Paranormal Tonight. That happened to me concurrently with HDA. It's not quite related. But every Thursday night, I'm on live on the UnX network, which is out of St. Louis, Missouri. Tomorrow night, I'm interviewing Paul Hynek. Next week, I'm interviewing Nick Pope. The week after, I'm interviewing Lynn Katai about the Phoenix Lights anniversary. But yeah, I could see an HDA dedicated podcast network. We want to do an annual awards dinner, awards show, awards dinner, honoring the best films, TV shows, documentaries and books. I've already talked to Paul Hynek about, and this is my idea, don't steal this, about creating the J. Allen Hynek Award for Excellence in the Media. You know, we may, instead of like, you know, Oscar or Emmy or Tony, we would have the Hynek. We'll give out the J. Allen Hynek Award, you know, excellence in documentaries, excellence in television programming. That can happen. Again, I've been a publicist 40 years. I've done a lot of things. Right this minute, we need some nice donations to help fund some of our ideas. But I would say within the coming years, if all goes well, we'll be the only entity of our kind on the planet. More and more people join every day. I get emails every day. Can I join? I was very gifted. I was blessed. I had an idea that caught a wave. And we're not exclusive, really, of anyone unless their husband is Bigfoot. We probably draw the line at that point. You know.
Do you know, Dan, I'd like to finish off just saying one thing. And I wish the group all the best, and I truly hope it has an impact, because I think right now the UFO UAP movement needs as many positive contributions as possible to really move things forward. My hope, and I think it represents at least some of the listeners and viewers based on comments and what I thought, is the group, and I think that award is a really great idea. What happens with those types of awards with a lot of groups is, and organizations, they can become very self-congratulatory, and the same names, the same friends all end up at the same dinners, at the same awards ceremony, giving each other lifetime achievement awards, and it's the same names and faces at the same conferences and expos, and there's such a large audience, and I think a want to see this topic move on from the same names and faces, not to say some of them haven't contributed massively, but there are so many great speakers out there, so many great researchers, great authors that don't get necessarily the attention. And I think something like a J. Allen Hynek Award, wonderful idea. I would love to see like the public being able to vote for that in some way, shape or form. That's not an easy thing to do. But rather than, you know, board A, B and C giving their friend the award and then next year at a different award they get it, because I think that could have some real meaning to some people out there that do some very, very good work and very hard work. And I'd love to see the HDA used for good.
I think that's a wonderful suggestion. If and when, and listen, this is probably a year away, but if and when we do that, I think we would do a note to all our members to please make some suggestions, right? Best documentary, best film, in your opinion. And this isn't necessarily going to be honoring people who are already members of HDA. It could be, you know, Steven Spielberg Lifetime Achievement Award for excellence in the media. I met Steven many years ago. He wouldn't remember me, but I'd like to give him a Hynek. You know, he worked with J. Allen Hynek on Close Encounters. I can get to Steven Spielberg. Yeah, I think what you said is terrific. Probably any of the first year or two would be more like internal, because nobody...
Sure.
Look, the general public, people in Wisconsin, they don't know about HDA. We're not the Emmys, the Oscars, the Tonys, or the Grammys.
No.
But it could propel itself to a higher level. Also, before we run out of time, I do want to say I am very fortunate to be involved with the Contact in the Desert 2024 conference this year. I wanted to get a little plug in there. May 30 through June 3rd, it's in Palm Desert, which is near, it's in Indian Wells, California, near Palm Springs. They are taking tickets now. They have remarkable, remarkable speakers there this year. Everyone you can think of is there. I'm doing an HDA panel there as well. Tickets are on sale now. Contactinthedesert.com. Please check that out. It's their 10-year anniversary. And Stephen Bassett and I have been involved in some of the presentations. We'll have an HDA booth there. George Norrie, Dee Wallace, Thomas Jane, maybe Shirley MacLaine, Nick Pope. People will be at the HDA booth signing autographs and taking photos with fans. It's going to be a lot of fun, man. So please check out contactinthedesert.com tickets. Check out HollywoodDisclosureAlliance.org. If you want to email me, my email is hda@HollywoodDisclosureAlliance.org. It's on the website. I'm glad to take your emails. I'm very blessed. I've been getting wonderful responses from around the world, man. We have a member who lives in South Africa. So we have people in Ireland, Italy, England, Scotland, Canada. It's very cool. I got to tell you, man, it's really quite cool. And I so appreciate that you gave me this time with you. I've so wanted to talk to you for a long time. And let's stay in touch. However we can collaborate in the future, Andy, please let me know.
Absolutely. Dan, you've rounded up very nicely. All those links will be in the podcast description as well, folks. So thank you for your time, Dan.
Thank you very much. Oh, also theunxnetwork.com, theunxnetwork.com is my podcast live from Hollywood. It's Paranormal Tonight. Check that out as well. Thanks, Andy.
Any more of those, I'm going to start charging you for plugs, Dan. As a publicist, you'll appreciate that.
I'll send you a PayPal after we... Okay, we'll keep that on the QT. All right,
that's brother. All right. That's all right.
Thanks, brother. Thank you.
That is all for this episode. Thank you very much for tuning in. Don't forget to leave the podcast a review on your chosen platform. Apple and Spotify do make a huge difference to the algorithm. If you're checking the show on YouTube, please don't forget to like and leave a comment on here as well. Any sharing you do is very much appreciated on any social media platform. And finally, you can listen to shows ad-free and sponsor-free in their glorious full versions by subscribing for less than the price of a coffee on Apple, Spotify. Just search That UFO Podcast Premium. YouTube, you can sign up and be a member, or you can do that through patreon.com. Thank you very much for listening, folks.
It wasn't a tic-tac and not quite a saucer, more like a hubcap designed by Chaucer. A little baroque and quite steampunk, like Alice was playing bass for the Parliament of Funk. The little fucker hovered right outside of my window, and when I shoved out the screen, he made it an issue. I don't think he expected me to see his ass, but I'd had some champagne and smoked a little rain. Meditated game of fate full on meta. Can't imagine how it could have been any better. I got to the top of the stairs and there he was. Like, you awake? I was about to abduct you, cuz. I jumped back and nearly kissed myself. Then I climbed out the window after the elf. And I woke up in my bed and there was something on my head. And everything was weird and everything was red. And I called up my boys. They thought this was noise. They thought it was a dream. They thought it was my toys. They thought it was my problems. And they think I should seek therapy. And I don't know what to do because it doesn't really scare me. If you really want to know who I think they be, I think it's you and me and us and we and him and her and that and she and that thing over there and what's that, Jane? But for being serious, open your mind, consider your heart, consider time, consider your space, consider your lies, consider your life, consider your eyes. We'll be right back.